Okay, so I'm involved in Co Says No to Austerity. That is a group which had its roots in the campaign against household and water charges. We were the co branch of that campaign. That's a campaign which collapsed in part due to the electoralism of some of the components. It's not the only factor, but that's partly our experience and will influence my presentation. So thinking about the water charges, we can see them in as the latest in the long line of austerity measures, or measures taken under the name of austerity. It's probably a better way to describe it. Everybody will have experienced those in various ways: direct pay cuts, changes to pensions, cuts to various social welfare, carers' allowances, and so on. The cap on replacing workers in the public sector, which is hitting the health sector particularly hard. So we've all experienced that, and we're also, I imagine, all aware that during this period of austerity over the last few years, that not everyone has suffered from austerity. With I think it was early this year, the revelation of how much profits have gone up for both the multinationals and for the big local Irish capitalists. The other thing about water, which is the water charges movement, which is a little bit different, is that more people are involved, and a lot more people who were not particularly involved in the past in political organisations. So, as Harpo said, the Co Says No has a bit of a reputation because of the success we had against the meter installations. So we've been able to organise in a structure based around estate groups coming together in a co-wide coordinating committee, which has meant that we've been able to defend our small town quite well. And we've used a structure of spotters where we watch for the meter installers coming onto town, and when we first of all had an arrangement with them where they would not install in houses where there weren't posters up, because we were able to do an intensive postering. We visited all the houses in the town, and in different areas you've got up to 90% plus with posters up, and some areas it's less. Then Irish Water broke that agreement, and that was when Karen and myself and one other person were arrested. But that was in a situation of an arrest where there were about nearly 100 people in that small estate, and immediately we were taken away. People took our place, and there were people lining up to take our places, and the guards chose not to escalate the situation, and Irish Water had to back down. After that, Irish Water became more aggressive generally, and so we changed to our policy, which was to defend the estates but let them to come in to do the houses without posters. We started blocking the estates. And I think we've had about 33 or 34 people who've had their names taken by the guards. But as it stands, apart from the arrests, and even us, we haven't been charged as yet. But we've been successful, and since Christmas, Irish Water have not been back on COVID at all. We have maintained the spotting, so we still have our campaign going and watching them. People will obviously be aware, not so directly, of what has occurred in other areas of the country, particularly in Dublin, where it's been a lot more aggressive. You've had Irish Water being more aggressive, semi-private security being aggressive, and also the guards being much more directly aggressive. I think that's a little bit different in Cove because it is the local guards, whereas in somewhere like Dublin, the guards are not local to the community and are not faced with the problem of having to worry about ongoing relations with the whole community, which I think was an issue in our favour. And so we were able to perhaps avoid some of the more violent conflicts which have occurred, and the more direct involvement by the guards in facilitating the meter installations which are occurring around the rest of the country. But as I said at the beginning, a lot more people have been involved. I don't know, I guess most of us were on the demonstration yesterday, and despite the government's hopes that the president being called a midget, still up to 10,000 people-ish were out on the streets of Cork. I've seen the pictures of the demonstration in Dublin, and that looks that looks massive, 30, 40 plus thousand, and there are the same spread of protests from around all the country. It's probably not as big as the 1st November in total numbers, but it's got to be well in the six figures, I would say, just on the reports I've seen. And given that it wasn't called centrally, as the previous one was, by Right to Water, and there's been less time to organise it, I think it's still an indication that the size of the protests are still significant. And the size of those protests did see us have a success in that the government was forced to back down in the third quarter of last year. I don't know if people remember when they were first talking about it, they were quite aggressive and bullish, and then they backed off, so they decreased the amount of the payments. They've pushed back the time where metering will come into force to 3 or 4 years away. But at the same time, I think we have to be careful in that they haven't completely replaced the stick with the carrot. And so there is still the talk of, there are still the penalties for non-payment. They are still talking about attachments to houses. There is still the talk, particularly for people in residential properties and for council housing, that they will attach the payments to rents, or they will put it on the private landlords to get the money back as part of your deposit. And there's also the question of the courts. There is an, at the moment, Irish Water is saying they envisage that they will not have to use the courts. But, of course, using the courts is the same for this as any bill you don't pay, and they reserve the right, as Alan Kelly made explicit, to use the courts if necessary. So I think that's primarily a political question, and after the election, if there is a government which is in favour of water charges, I would expect them to become more aggressive. And that's an interesting thing. If you think about it, there's been a lot of discussion about the elections and particularly about the polls, because there's been a steady decline in the support for the major parties, the establishment parties. And I think in the last ones there was a small bounce back of a couple of percentage for Fine Gael, and might have been 1% for Labor. But generally there has been a steady decline, and it's not unreasonable to see that as being fairly directly related to the strength of the household charges campaign. So something we might ask ourselves is, why is the government pushing ahead with something which is clearly so unpopular and certainly is going to just will be a major contributing factor to what is likely to be the complete destruction of Labor electorally, and certainly is going to hurt Fine Gael to some degree, we can't be quite sure. And I think that it's necessary to look beyond the immediate Irish context to the answer for that. And key to that is recognising that water supplies all around the world are being increasingly seen as a very valuable commodity by the international capitalists and the big multinationals. For instance, people might have seen on, there's the that thing on Facebook about the CEO of Nestle saying that water is not a human right. And that's related to, actually back to a World Water Forum in the Netherlands in 2000, where there was a discussion around that, and that was one of the things, and Nestle and other multinationals argued for water to be described as a human need and not a human right. So something you need is obviously something that you can be commodified and be made to pay for. And we are seeing now the buying up of rights to water. There's a case of a small town or city in Canada where the water table has decreased so low that it's becoming quite difficult for the town. And there are examples in Africa, I think in Ethiopia, where that is also occurring, and the natural wells which the population get are drying up and they're being forced to buy water. And there are examples of having to, the costs of being provided with water, have it, because it's now bottled water coming from a factory somewhere, are increased by factors of thousands. 2,000 is a number one of the NGOs has given. And so that's the future. And there's also the question of Ireland's place in the world hierarchy of capitalist societies. We would understand the Irish economy to be a semi-colony. The Irish economy is completely dominated by the multinationals, primarily British and United States, with the Germans coming in about third and the French and the Italians a little bit below that, but primarily British and European. So the Irish politicians will be right now coming under tremendous pressure to carry out the wishes of those people who actually own the economy. The American Chamber of Commerce, I'm sure, in Ireland, I'm sure is at the door of the tea shop regularly. And then there's also the question, as we know, of the bigger Irish capitalists like Dennis O'Brien, who wants his slice of the pie. And so he's particularly looking at being involved in the infrastructure in Ireland. And we've seen that with his involvement in GMC Sierra, particularly with the meter installations. And I think that also understanding that context, that this is so important to international capitalism. I mean, you see various references to books being written by academics about the water wars, and we are already seeing that commodification of water. And that kind of explains what we're seeing as regards the Gardaí. Now, we didn't see that in Cove, but I think that's for particular reasons. But in many, many places around the country, we're seeing the Gardaí effectively being used as a private security force for Irish water. And people are outraged that they are being quite so blatant. And some of the, I'm sure people have seen the videos on Facebook and elsewhere of the guards just completely operating as the police force for Irish water. And I think that's interesting because that is, I think, opening the eyes up of people about what the actual social role of the Gardaí is. It's not that, as people are saying, oh, you're traitors to your oath. And so there's this oath where they're supposed to protect the interests of all the people. But the reality is that their decision, or the decision made by the hierarchy of the guards, is not just some question of bad policy that they're going against their oath, but it actually is their real social function, which is to enforce law and order. But law and order is not an abstract thing. This is a capitalist law and order, which at its core is about a system of law and order to maximise profit. And when you have something like water, which our imperialist overlords and the multinationals consider to be very important, then that comes down the chain of command and expresses itself in the guards. Now, we are entering somewhat of a crucial period in the, or phase in the water charges, because the bills are going to start arriving in April. I heard from the Socialist Party actually that originally they were thinking of giving the bills out over a 2-week period, which would have meant that we might have been able to do a burning, but according to them there was a briefing to at the door where they're talking now about spreading it out over an 8-week period. And I think that's primarily to stop us from doing a big protest, because they do know that the protest movement remains as strong as it is, despite the lies they're trying to feed us through the media. And so it's going to be very important to try to maximise the number of people not paying. And there is going to be a massive propaganda offensive, and obviously we're seeing the start of that. I mean, all the amazing things that were said about the president in that protest. And apparently, I was just checking my phone there, and there's a huge debate going on the Marion Finucane show today about it. And I think that with people ringing in and saying about how big it was or how small it was. So the question of what to do in response to the bills is very important. And I think there's two main strategic paths coming out and being presented with the anti-water charges movement. So there's the kind of electoralist route. What we need to do is organise to elect a government which will abolish the charges, and that's being presented mostly by Right to Water. And then there's the focus on boycotting the bills and boycotting meter installations and organising that around the community groups, base groups that exist, and trying to strengthen those. So behind the Right to Water position, it seems that Sinn Féin are a very significant element of that, and certainly that's what Sinn Féin are arguing. They haven't quite come out explicitly against the boycott, but at the time of Paul Murphy's surprise electoral defeat of the Sinn Féin candidate back in October, Sean Crowe, a Sinn Féin TD, said that Paul Murphy was irresponsible to tell people not to pay their border charges. So they're very close to that. But even not coming out with a positive statement calling for a boycott, the Right to Water leadership are certainly not giving confidence to the 20 or 30%, according to the polls, who are unsure about what to do about the bills, and are certainly not giving encouragement or confidence to anybody who's wavering and is starting to worry about their previous commitment to not paying the bills. It's really not a time to be even-handed or neutral on that question of non-payment. So if you look at the boycott side, I don't know who makes it up. There are the community-based groups all over the country, hundreds of them, literally, like Cove says no. There's a new national organisation, which may or may not actually be taking place, called the Non-Payment Network, which involves some of those community groups, and We Won't Pay, which is the organisation of the Anti-Austerity Alliance, which is an organisation of the Socialist Party, which is involved in the anti-water charges movement. And then there's another grouping of community-based groups, somewhat involved with a group in Dublin called Communities Against Water Charges, who've set up a new network called the Water Action Alliance. Now, there's some overlap between those different components of the boycott supporters, but they're kind of like that. And it's also true that the division that I outlined between electoralism and the boycott is not completely clear-cut. Because, for instance, the Socialist Party Anti-Austerity Alliance, who are the dominant force behind We Won't Pay, and also the Socialist Workers Party, who probably orientate more to right to water, but have been involved in the 31st of January, all the protests around the country yesterday, they're both electoralist, but they're on the side of the boycott as well. Now, I think that's a potential problem, because it was the electoralism of these groups, particularly the Socialist Party, that I said right at the beginning, was something of a contributing factor to the collapse of the campaign against household and water charges. At the time, they said that we're going to be involved in the elections, but it's going to have no impact on our work involved in the household and water charges campaign. But the reality was, as soon as the election started, they just disappeared. They were gone. And I think that that's another problem again. People were on the protest yesterday. You might have seen the We Won't Pay banner. But like with every We Won't Pay banner, it's got Anti-Austerity Alliance in the corner. It's an explicit link to the Anti-Austerity Alliance and that electoralism. And you might hear Socialist Party or Anti-Austerity Alliance representatives talk about the need to politicise the movement. But by this, they don't mean having educational study groups or watching films or having discussions about what the privatisation of water or how to fight the water charges. What they actually mean is creating electoral machines and around canvases to support Anti-Austerity Alliance candidates. For instance, they came down to the Socialist Party came down to Cove Says No and tried to convince us to stand a candidate, probably Karen it would have been, but that was rejected by Cove Says No. But they are trying to encourage groups all over the country to stand candidates. And so I think that electoralism is a problem in a couple of ways. An immediate kind of tactical sense, as we saw with the campaign against the household and water charges, it diverts both human and financial resources away from the fight against Irish waters. That is what would happen. It would happen. But in a strategic sense, and perhaps more importantly, it also encourages a political idea of political passivity, of let's just vote better leaders in. And one of the strengths of the anti-water charges movement is the mobilisation of community-based groups and getting people involved in political ideas and political discussion and taking ownership and responsibility for organising their communities to defend themselves against Irish water. And I think that a simple, too much of an emphasis on electoralism points away from that. It points to a passive, you just tell us to where to go out in leaflets, you just tell us where to do this, and you just stay in your houses and tick the election box once every 4 or 5 years. And there's also a question that winning control in the Dáil and capitalist parliaments is not really power. Not in the sense of the working class and working people actually running society. Of course, getting elected into parliament can be part of establishing real working class power, but it's not the same thing. And there is a bit of a tendency to say, elect us, then we'll be in power, and then things can be changed. Because real power in a capitalist society like Ireland actually lies with the people who make the day-to-day decisions which affect our lives. And that's not actually the people in the door. It's the people who sit in the boardrooms of big business and make the decisions which will actually affect our day-to-day lives as people who have to go to work and get money. And it's those same capitalists, those, as I have in my notes here, blood-sucking parasites, who are actually the people who have the ear of the people in Parliament. They buy them off with direct and indirect bribes. It's no accident that Bertie Ahern is now on some fabulous tour where he gives speeches and gets paid unreal money. It's not an accident that someone like Tony Blair is, special envoy to the Middle East or something, earning unbelievable money. That's no accident. Those bribes are very real. But they are there every day talking in their ears. They have direct access to their politicians. And the idea of working class power is something which runs and comes from a much deeper participatory forms of democracy, rather than the very partial and passive vote once every 4 or 5 years. What we're seeing in the water charges movement is something much, certainly what we see in Cove is something much more real than that. People are actively involved in making the decisions. They have responsibility for looking after their estates. They have responsibility for electing representatives who make decisions at the Cove-wide level. We're trying to set up regional links. We've helped set up East Cork Says No. We had representatives go along to a meeting called by the Martin Says No's group to try and organise networking between groups in Cork. We've had people up at the non-payment network to try and be involved in that. We've had people going up to the Communities Against Water Charges to try and make those connections. But that's based around a different kind of democracy. Now, of course, it is possible to use the parliamentary process, for propaganda purposes and to agitate. But any group doing that has to be very openly conscious and openly argue that this is what they're doing. And at no stage should they give illusions that society can be fundamentally changed in the interest of working people through the parliamentary process. And they've got to be very aware that when they're working in Parliament, they're doing so as representatives of the working class, very much in the enemy camp. And their strategic perspective, which they should be trying to get across at any time if you do have representatives in Parliament, is that their aim is to replace the very partial and passive democracy of the parliamentary model with this much more higher forms of workers' democracy, which we're seeing in the embryo in the form of the anti-water charges movement. There is, however, one element that is, I think, importantly missing from the anti-water charges movement, and that is being organised in workplaces. So we're very much community and neighbourhood based, but there is a bit of a perspective being put out in the water charges movement that we will be able to defeat them fairly easily if we just have enough people. I'm not so convinced of that, partly because of what I argued before, that the strategic importance of the water supply and the control of the water supply and the massive profits that are going to be made by the big multinationals means that it is quite possible that even with 50-60% boycott, they could still push ahead. And that if it comes to that, then our movement has to be able to respond, and that will require building towards significant industrial action, I think, both with the workers who are involved in the water supply, mainly SIPTU and impact workers who came across from the councils and now work for Irish Water, but also in terms of building towards a real national stoppage, a real national strike. That runs against a problem in terms of the trade union leadership, who are, to say the least, prevaricating on their opposition to the water charges and are very much in the camp of let's just elect a nicer government. So ideally, the water charges movement will be in position to organise workplace groups just as easily as we can organise community-based groups. But I think that involves a significant political struggle. And certainly the leadership of the trade unions are in a bit of an invidious situation. I don't know if people saw that the new board of Irish Water's parent company, Urvia, I don't know how to pronounce it, Urvia, includes the SIPTU General Secretary, Joe Flynn, who receives €15,000 a year for presumably going to a handful of meetings every year. So that's another example of the direct bribes which get given to the trade union leadership. There is another problem in the anti-water charges movement, and that's the use of the term the people. This tends to give the idea that all us Irish separative class interests have a common interest about water. And I think that the actual reality of the campaigns which have been most well organised and have most been most militant against the water charges have been those which have been organised in primarily working class communities. There are some of the smaller smaller capitalists, but essentially it's a working class movement. And I think that that idea of the need for being conscious of ourselves as being working class people needs to be deepened and made more conscious. And it's not this question of working class independence and being conscious of ourselves as the working class, and what is occurring around the water is the capitalist class trying to steal the rights to the water and make money out of this, what is actually a human right, but they're now called a human need, so they're allowed to make money out of it. It's not a completely abstract question. There's obviously the issue of Sinn Féin, but another example that was referred to on the march yesterday was Greece and the election of the Syriza government. And I think that what has happened in Greece, it actually has some significant problems with it because of the nature of that government. Because it's not a workers' government, it's a coalition between Syriza and the independent Greeks, the ANEL, who are an extremely right-wing capitalist party, anti-racist and anti-immigrant organisation. And so I think that in looking to the positives about Greece, which is the working class mobilising behind Syriza, the model of the government, which is a coalition between this working class organisation, Syriza, and a political bloc with a capitalist organisation, is a very dangerous one. This is not a new phenomenon. These kind of government coalitions, which in our tradition are called popular fronts, have always ended in disaster. And I think that in the context of Greece, there is a very big danger of either a military, given that they were in a military dictatorship only 40 years ago, or a fascist, because Golden Dawn, although they went down slightly in the elections, an outright fascist party, still remained very large. Over 50% of the police force voted for Golden Dawn, according to exit polls. So that danger is very real. And the danger of this coalition not being prepared to encourage what I would say was absolutely necessary, which is the arming of the working class and the organisation of self-defence groups in the community groups that exist and the workplace groups that exist, is a very real danger there. Of course, it is true against that getting a workers' party into government or a coalition of workers' parties, getting a majority in a capitalist parliament, can be a very powerful part of a broader revolutionary movement. So it's not that I'm arguing against standing in elections or as a complete principle, but it has to be very conscious that this is only a subservient part of the overall movement, and what is key is the organisation of working class people and taking responsibility and being conscious through these other forms of working class democracy that we are seeing in the anti-water charges movement. In the Irish context, probably the main danger that that question poses itself is not perhaps in the classical example of a popular front where you have a big working class radical reformist organisation which then goes into a coalition with a small capitalist party and then uses that coalition as a reason not to go forward to very radical demands. In Ireland, the problem is more likely to be Sinn Féin, and that Sinn Féin will, as they can do, project itself as an answer for the working class, but will bundle that up in terms of we, the Irish people. And I think that is a very big political problem, which, as the election gets closer, is going to become much more significant. Now, opposition to the water to meter installations and non-payment of the bills also shouldn't be seen as some kind of end of themselves. And I know that particularly when we were at the height of the organising against that, I think it was about 2, 3, perhaps 4 weeks when was every day Irish Water was trying to come into code. Every day we had a standoff at one or perhaps two estates. Every day people like Karen who were around during the day were spotters, were following them around, we were finding out where they were, people were moving around the town. That was very, very intense. And it was very easy to see that as being what it was all about. And yes, there is that immediateness and fighting against the water charges, the water bills when they come will be important because it does place the viability of Irish Water into doubt. And that may make it difficult for them to do under the European legislation. It may make it more difficult for a new government to go ahead. But I think it's important for us to recognise in a more strategic, middle, medium to long term, that even to the extent we're able to be successful around a mass boycott and continuing to disrupt the meter installations, that's not going to be enough by itself. The reality is that governments and the laws they produce within capitalism come and go. They can do all kinds of amazing things. In Italy, they just installed a technical government. They can do amazing things. And it's always interesting to see that no matter how it kind of swings backwards and forwards in terms of governments which are more pro reforms in a positive sense for the general population and working people as compared to ones which are more aggressive like the current government we've got in attacking working people, that kind of swings backward and forwards. But in the long term, if you look at it, somehow, consistently, the tiny elite who sit at the top of our society, what is called the 1%, though I think that 1%, 99% is a bit crude, but it does capture something. Those people, somehow, by hook or by crook, no matter how left the governments may have been, they always keep on making profits. They always keep on getting richer. The concentration of wealth, some of the charts which you've seen in the post-war period after the immediate post-war boom and the immediate crash after that, it's an amazing concentration of capital which is occurring. Amazing concentration of wealth and a miserization of not only what are traditionally seen at the people at the bottom, the 10 or 20%, but what are the so-called middle class and what are being called in Ireland now the working poor. People who have a job which would have, but are now struggling to survive on that job. So really in terms of safeguarding water as a human right, which should be freely available for all our citizens, the only really realistic solution is the ending of capitalism. People will say, well, that's not realistic. It's very, very difficult, I concede that. But in terms of realism, the idea that it's possible to make capitalism work, that it's possible to make within capitalism, to stop that small elite and the multinationals that their money is manifest through, to stop them through their own system from continuing to maximise their profits, continuing to steal human rights, continuing, and if you look at what the multinationals do in the third world, and thus their hands, their elbows, their shoulders are covered in blood. That's the reality of the world we live in. So I think if you want to talk about realism, the idea that that is possible is completely unrealistic. The alternative is very hard, but it actually is, I think, the only realistic alternative. And that poses some very big questions, because that looks a long way away from where we are. And so a discussion around this doesn't draw very many people, because it seems like a very hard thing and not realistic, like electing some people to pass some nice new laws is. And it requires building a working class party which has that inculcated into its program, which has a revolutionary perspective. Now obviously that can be manifest in various ways, in various tactics, and various strategy, and presented, but we need working class organisation which has the conception of openly and consciously being for the overthrow of the system and its replacement with a system which is not based on profit, which is not made based on the ownership of virtually everything by a very, 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 very small number of people. And they talk about 80 to 100 families own 40 to 50% of the entire world. It's insane. Now that creating of such a party would involve participation in all these campaigns alongside other people who don't necessarily agree with that, who do think it's possible to change things. And you have to be able to work alongside people despite those differences. As we do in COVE, we've got 100 or 200 activists who've been involved. And that we're across the political spectrum there. And we can work around this immediate aim, but alongside that you've also got to try and find a way of having political discussion around these wider strategic questions. So I think that's part of the reason for calling this meeting, is to have those discussions. And that's where I'll end, so hopefully we can have some discussion around those ideas. Thank you very much.